Welcome to the Bards FM podcast. This is Scott Kesterson, and tonight you're listening to Declaration of Military Accountability signatory Mara Marcy.
This war is real. Fighting is everything. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Tempt not the righteous man to draw his sword. Conviction, righteousness, ruthlessness. To understand tolerance, you have to understand the line of intolerance. War is the teacher, soldiers are the students. They become the bards of war.
Good evening, patriots. And tonight is Tuesday, March 19th in the year 2024. Tonight we have a very special guest. It's Mara Marcy. She is the only member of the Declaration of Military Accountability who is a spouse and not a veteran herself or an active duty member herself. And she has a very interesting perspective on this entire issue of the vaccine mandates within the Department of Defense, her role as a mother, and the fight that she's now in to go into politics to try to make a change from the bottom up. A really good, really good story, and I think you'll enjoy it a lot. Now, we are honestly, at this point in time, seeing a level of awakening happening across our nation. It's rather stunning. We're starting to see so much flood out, and to be honest, I'm even a little bit surprised at how much is being allowed on X, aka formerly Twitter, and there's a lot there, and it's really interesting to see this. And a lot of that information continues to pour out and point its fingers towards a singular core. And it all has to do with a very evil and dark group of people that have joined together in their various forms of mafia and criminal cabals to lead the way and towards destroying a nation and doing so without any limits to what they'll do. We've seen that with this vaccine. I don't think we've ever imagined anything quite so evil and so long in development. As we've seen this, quote, vaccine, it was a vaccine that was originally developed back in 2012 with the intent of ultimately being used as a weapon system against the United States and the Western world. The virus, as we will call it, which we're going to have a very good discussion Thursday night because Dr. Lee Merritt's coming back on Thursday night to get into this whole concept of parasites versus virus, prion disease, a variety of other things we're going to touch on, as she continues to be one of the lead researchers in this area of what really we're dealing with. And I think that's the big issue, is what is it that we're really being confronted with? What is it that we're really fighting? And what exactly is the injection? What is this vaccine? What we do know is that there's been enormous amount of levels of corruption in our government, far beyond anything we ever imagined. And that included senior levels in the military leadership and senior leaders. And these leaders have been deeply compromised. They've forced a mandate, and we've had many soldiers that have been deeply damaged and injured by something that was intended to wipe out the entire force. Fortunately, we still have a force, but I think at the end of the day, their goal was to destroy as many people as possible and leave us in such a broken state that it would have been an easy walk-in to steal our freedoms. The plan that they're working on is obviously not going as well as intended. We still have quite a measure of freedom of speech on the web. We still have an enormous ability to arm ourselves as a nation. We still have an ability to communicate and assemble, which is huge. And in spite of their hatred for us and their attempts even now by a federal judge in California to allow illegal aliens to carry weapons, they are in panic. And this is, I can assure you, they are looking at a place right now where they're literally worried about what is going on to protect themselves as their power structures are now beginning to crumble. One of those other indicators is this eclipse, which they have been spending an enormous amount of time and fanning the flames of fear that somehow this eclipse is going to bring about a biological attack or nuclear attack that they've apparently been planning in preparation for 2 years. Anybody that plans for an attack for 2 years that hasn't solved the problem and has kept it quiet from the public is either complicit or they're just outright retarded at their job. And so this is what we're starting to see is just the depths of corruption and fear that they're trying to pull out. These were all part of a scripted plan, and they're still on that script, but their timing is off. And that's pretty evident at this point in time. What is at stake here, though, is still the nation. It doesn't take away the magnitude or threat of which we have. And the difference being between a plan that's executed and successful and a plan that's been executed off timing and its success or failure is going to depend upon the willingness of the people to stand up, be awake, and speak truth to power and start taking back this nation to the many ways that we can. All of this action ultimately can and should be a peaceful action. We shouldn't have to go to that level of guns as they so want us to do, but that is their intention. What is limiting that, if that ever has to go to guns, would be the failure of the people to stand up and do their job. And I think that's where, as a community of what we reference ourselves as a remnant and the many other tribes of remnant, I don't think there's a more important time than ever than to get involved and to speak the truth to power. And it's important because now I'm getting some good reports, outstanding reports, from churches that are now starting to speak into the harder truths about what we're dealing with here, the harder truths about who's behind this evil. And it is starting to wake people up at the most important level, which is our pulpits are starting to revive their strength step by step. It takes time, but it takes courage for people to speak those truths out and people to put the pressure on the pulpit to start having the compulpits see what's going on. In the meantime, we're left with a country that's pretty well ravaged, and we have an economy that's in shambles. We have people that are homeless, and that's off the charts. And we have a growing number of illegals that have come across the border, some of which may stay, hopefully most of which will be returned. Again, the question is, where will they go, and what type of humanitarian crisis are we going to face as a nation? That ultimately gets to the heart of us as a Christian nation. What are we going to do with the problems that we now inherit, whether it's children that have been mutilated by their parents for transgender surgeries, whether it's people that have been raped, families that have lost loved ones because of illegal crime, whether it's the amount of child sex trafficking that's been off the scales and the 400,000 plus children that are now missing that came across our border, whether it's those involved in those crimes, whether it's the idea of, as a nation, of what we're going to do about our homelessness and what are we going to do about this damage of vaccine-damaged people. These are all big issues, and the only answer to that is going to be the revival of the true ecclesia, the true sense of the church, not to stay within its walls, but to get out into the community and start using its resources, its talent, its combined efforts to teach this nation again what it is to love thy neighbor. And that's the critical piece about all of this. So before we get going tonight, I have a new sponsor. I introduced him last week, but it's a good sponsor. I'm happy to have him on board. They're called Warrior Essentials. So look, the thing that we have right now is with this COVID and the vaccines, there is no doubt that what has happened is we've been lied to. More truths are being revealed, and the more we learn, the darker it becomes. And so we know that we're dealing with lies, coercion, force, fear. And they're all the tools that have been used to try to get people to take this injection. The problem is that even if you didn't take the injection, there is still this concern of people being exposed to spike proteins by shedding, and that's a real issue. And while there has been a concern of this, Warrior Essentials has introduced a product that looks to be a way through removing those toxins from the body. Now, to say this and be clear, what this is, these are not statements that have been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. It's not a product that's intended to diagnose, treat, and cure, prevent any disease. But this is a process which they've developed, it's patent pending, and it's designed for anyone who has been jabbed or around those who have been jabbed to remove the toxins, to repair the circulatory system, and restore the epigenome. So it's a great product, and it's easy to find. All you have to do is go to recoverwithbards.com. Recoverwithbards.com. That's going to be underneath the link. The link will be underneath the show. There's nothing out here that I've seen like it. And there's a special offer right now for Bards Nation. And this is great. So if you go to recoverwithbards.com, you'll save up to 50% off on the regular prices plus free shipping. The website is extensive. You can find all sorts of documentation and reading to understand what these processes are. It's a three-step process. It'll help rid your body of toxic spike proteins and overall boost your health. product is outstanding, and it's one I'm really happy to have on board here as a new sponsor to the show. So head on over to recoverwithbards.com. Recoverwithbards.com. You'll find a great amount of resource and very good reading about what their product does, and I think you'll find it to be a great benefit, jabbed or unjabbed, to help get the body restored and rebuild that essential epigenome in your body. Now, the Declaration of Military Accountability, it is a critical part of the time we're in, and it's not like it's been planned. I actually heard an interview the other day of somebody who was like, this was all planned from within side. This is the White Hats doing this. Let's be clear. That's not what it was. The Declaration of Military Accountability is an organic response to a critical problem, a betrayal within our ranks of officers who did not do the right thing. And it's very hard for me at times to sit here and tell you that we've had over 300 officers that have literally violated their oath. The problem is that when we go back and we go to the Obama administration, we know that they knew this day was coming. And that's one of the reasons that over 151 officers were removed, senior officers, 06 and above, were removed and replaced with communist-friendly type, deep state-friendly type officers that have left us severely hampered and the ethics of our military completely ravaged. The question I always ask in all of this is, where are we going to arrive at? And I think that ultimately is that what has happened here, which is to me a very big concern on a deeper level, is if we don't stand strong on the morals and values of what this nation is, we are going to arrive at a place that compromises on everything. And it's sad. I watched, there's a Tyson factory that just recently closed. And that Tyson factory released, I believe it was 1,200 people they fired in a town of 8,000. Now, first of all, that town is going to vaporize. It's not, over the next year or two, there's not going to be much left. Same thing that happened to the town that used to house Cabela's and their manufacturing site. So we have an issue here of a town that's being heavily hit. The person, the reason I say this is this interview that I listened to this person, their approach was like this. Now, I understand that Tyson is hiring illegals and they can do that, but what about the loyalty to the town? Americans have to get back to having a fire and a backbone to understand that there's a right and a wrong. The corporations don't get to do whatever they want just because Wall Street is pulling the strings on how to make more money and ravage more workforces, hiring illegals to replace regular people of the United States because they want to lower the labor line and they want to increase their ability to make profits for the investors. That's just a broken model. And so it's important for us to start getting righteously angry about these things. Start talking the hard lines. It is unjust, immoral for a company to come in and just fire 1,200 people and the next day hire 1,200 more illegals. There is no, it's okay. There is no okay about it. Our nation does not need illegal people here. There is a process by which we vet and bring people in and we want them here because that's what makes America great. What we don't want is a bunch of vagabonds coming across our border willy-nilly just because our border's open and to fill the ranks of the unemployed or the empty job labor market simply because corporation wants cheap labor. That should make everybody upset. And it's just one of many things. The DMA is one of these things that sets that line. It sets the bar high. The Declaration of Military Accountability comes in and very clearly states that we are seeking and will pursue to the end of time, at least of time that I'm here on Earth, the accountability of its officers and the people in the ranks that chose to violate their oath and break the law and force and compel soldiers to take an illegal vaccination. The one thing we can see is that even in the forcing sense didn't even happen in the military, but the compelling with extreme measure did. We know that in the military, there was extreme measures used, including advanced torture techniques to try to wear people down, break their will, and get them to comply to taking the vax. The question that everybody needs to ask is why? Who was behind this and why were commands and why were officers so compelled and senior NCOs so compelled to be willing to be participant in a process that ultimately was using an experimental drug on the mass force? And we're seeing the consequences. Our recruitments are down. We are seeing the brokenness of the military. And the problem I have with this, when we go back to that principle of how will this change us, The military-industrial complex is all excited about what they get to fill the gaps with. New contracts for new technologies, most of them AI-driven. We don't need the human in the loop anymore. We're just going to turn everything over to the AI. And this means billions and billions of dollars towards Raytheon, which I think is RX now, towards Boeing, towards all these Lockheed Martin. All of these big companies now are just sucking this up in the excitement of being able to take advantage and profit on the blood of the soldiers that have been kicked out or the soldiers that have been maimed or even killed by virtue of this vax. That's where when you go to that and you say, well, that's a very convenient outcome, and you literally have to take it to the root and go, it's probably not convenient. They probably had their fingers in this from the very beginning, seeing an opportunity to transform the force into something that was artificial intelligence driven and limiting the access of humans to where they can just build the technologies and not have to worry about human in the loop. That's literally what we're seeing happen right now in our force, and it's unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. You cannot turn the security of a nation over to an AI. If you want to do that, go watch the film Terminator and see what happens in Skynet. And with this, we have corrupted forces on the outside of our country. One country in particular, that country would be called Israel. So to be clear, with all of its agents and all of its Zionists that have infiltrated the various ranks of our nation and in senior ranks of influence and in the lobbyists that are driving this and driving this change for multiple reasons. For one, they are going every technology we develop, they try to get their hands on to use it some other way to try to wipe out the Palestinians or cause a war in the Middle East. All of it geared towards their vision that there's going to be a great Messiah coming if they do it right. We have to put a stop to this. And the only way we're going to get there is when we have the force and the integrity within us to stand up and speak the truth to power. Our greatest, quote, ally that we thought is really our greatest enemy. And they have been working inside to pilfer us, tear us down, and to benefit for themselves to raise up one class of people that they believe are the righteous class to rule over everyone. That's not God's world. That's not the world Jesus talked to us about. And that's definitely not the world that our country stands for. And so this is where this hour, it takes courage to stand into this. And then tonight, we're going to hear from somebody that has that courage. Somebody who is a mother of four. Somebody who's a wife of a military wife who has seen the challenges of her husband as an officer in the Navy. And someone who finally has said enough is enough. I'm going to step into politics and against all odds. I'm going to run and I'm going to advocate for what's right. The very realistic goal of what she intends to achieve if she wins, which I hope she does. Now, before we go any further and before we get started tonight, I just want to point out one other thing. Sleep is essential. And I'm such a big believer in sleep, and you know where I'm going with this because there's only one company to help you out right, and that's MyPillow. MyPillow.com/Bards, promo code Bards. We have talked to MyPillow for 3 years, and I'm so proud to still have them part of this and part of the Patriot movement. Mike Lindell has literally spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to save this nation, and it's driven by the ability for the products that he sells, he converts over to a reverse flow into the system to support patriots, to support people with addictions, to support his legal fights, to support the turning over of the results of 2020 and get it back right. And at this point, literally, he's put himself almost at a point several times now of almost going to the point of bankruptcy, and yet he still fights. He carries Christ in his heart. He gives like I've never seen anybody give. And I just encourage you to continue to look at that place for your home needs, from whether it's a comforter you need, whether it's pillows, which are literally the best, whether it's sheets that are top notch. Giza cotton sheets for me, if you listen to the resistance chicks, are going to tell you the best are going to be flannel sheets. These are products that when you're buying them, what you know is these dollars are coming back into the fight of this nation. They are coming back into a fight to help save this nation, and it's one of the critical engines and one of the few companies in our entire nation that stood up and did what was right when everybody else turned their back and did what was easy and ultimately wrong. So from my own perspective, I have a loyalty to Mike Lindell and his company in spite of all the attempts to disparage him, in spite of all the attempts to push him out of the way, a man that came from literally brokenness, Christ came to Christ, has built a company of incredible capability, and has turned so much of that company's profits, not in his pocket, but back to the Patriot movement and back to the restoring of integrity of this nation. So head on over to MyPillow.com. MyPillow.com/Bards. Your promo code's Bards. And if you already have 50 MyPillows, I've got a lot of them, and you don't want another one, then buy one for a liberal. Literally, like somebody who you know is bent against the system, but they'll love this pillow. You don't even have to tell them it's a MyPillow. Just get them there. And then once they get it and they open it up and put their head on and sleep, they're like, that was the best night's sleep ever. Then just tell them, well, that was from Mike Lindell, one of the best conservatives in the nation, and watch their head explode. And then at least they have a comfortable pillow to lay on when their head does explode. That's just the other side of it. Besides the fact they're just great pillows. So anyway, MyPillow.com/Bards, promo code Bards. Let's have some fun now, because here it is, Patriots. We've been fighting hard for a lot of years, and we're starting to see some light because we're starting to see how truth works and how God works when we push for truth and we keep our heart and our eyes on Jesus. With all that said, allow me to introduce you to a military wife of a naval officer. This is Mara Macy. Patriots, I'm really honored today to have Mara Macy, who is an signer of the Declaration of Military Accountability, the DMA, and also the only person who's not officially a veteran, but in fact, she's a veteran's wife, and she's an active in this fight and military spouse, which is great to have her on. And it's going to give us a very different perspective on everything we're dealing with in this fight and what it is to be a mother, and she's a mother of four, in this fight, of once again, like we all are trying to do, to take back this nation. So, Mara, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for having me, Scott.
Sure. Why don't you give us a little background on yourself so people get to know you a little bit?
Yeah. So both my husband, Ted, who is still active duty Navy, and I grew up in Massachusetts, where we met when we were 17 years old. I worked for my family's business, which is a golf management company out of Massachusetts, until Ted and I got married. Then we moved over to Spain, had our first baby, and it all started from there. I've been a stay-at-home mom, and until I really realized how bad the government was, I planned on doing that until my kids were out of high school. But instead, now I'm here fighting government corruption, have been for the past few years, and really doing everything I can to get our country back on track for my kids and for everybody else's.
It's interesting how many women in this fight have come forward. And we talk about this a lot on the show. This has really been a fight that has struck home, I think, to the sense of the nurturing and the protecting of the children. And I'd like to get your opinion, too, on what that is for you, but also why you think that so many men have been sidelined.
Yeah. So honestly, I think men have been shut down the same way we see the race wars starting up again. It's you're meant to or being born a certain way. And I think a lot of feeling with all the pressure that society is putting on them, that they're part of the problem. And I could never get on board with that narrative, as I have two sons, both white male Christians. So who am I to sit there and attack the white male Christian for being in leadership in this country for the history of it? We need to embrace the changes that we have, but I feel that men have ended up taking a step back because they feel guilty. And I don't think that's the men that are in my life and my community, but that's probably by choice too. I seek out men who hit that male persona that I look for in my life. So I think that society has really conditioned men to feel like they need to take a step back, and that just leaves it for the women to take a step forward.
And it has been. If we hadn't have had strong women in this fight, we honestly wouldn't be as far down the road as we are. And I say this regularly on the show, because it's taken the courage of women to step in, especially women who have been who've taken a step beyond just motherhood, stepping into the professional realms. And I think that's been a big part of getting men to come back out and step in once again in that protector role and to start taking the lead. What's your thoughts?
Well, absolutely. So I don't take being a stay-at-home mother lightly. I knew at some point growing up that I was going to face some backlash, realize how bad it was going to be, because I think that when you grow up, In the time period that I grew up in, and I was born in 1980, so that'll give you an idea of my upbringing. we were the end result of what was happening with the women's equality issues, and they really were trying to drive home the fact that women needed to be independent and have their own careers. But my whole goal in life was to be a mom and a wife. And it's not because I couldn't have a career. I easily could have had a career in something with, you know, even with my own family business, which we still own. So I chose my path. And I know that people like to, even conservatives, like to kind of make it seem like, well, you know, you're just a stay-at-home mom. Well, I'll tell you what, my kids are well-behaved. They're kind, they're respectful, they're intelligent. And if we had more stay-at-home parents, whether it's a mom or dad, I'll give it that. But whether it was the mom or dad, we would have a much better generation coming up right now than we do. And I think that's where we kind of fell apart. We tore apart the family by saying everybody needs to go in a different direction. So my mother had a career. My father had a career, and it's not like it wasn't an option. It was a choice. That choice was to protect my children and to make sure I was raising well children. So I think we needed more of it, not less, but society knew how to break it down and get their Marxist tactics in there. So it is, this is a long-term plan.
100%. It's 100%. And we've done a lot of discussions about this. It goes back to the Kinsey Institute. It goes back to the sex and love revolution and drugs revolution. It's all, the whole thing is corrupt at the very core. And the women's liberation movement, which literally was taking women out of the home by design to say, you need to not be a mother, but you need to be in the workforce. Are you feeling some of that in that pressure of questioning you as a mother, of questioning you making the transition to, say, into the professional world? What do you see in that, in those two circles? Because they're distinctly different.
Yeah, I get a lot of pushback, you know, between, well, what was your career, or you're just a stay-at-home mom, what qualifies you? Well, I'll tell you what qualifies me. It's a thing called the United States Constitution. That sets forth what I need to be or not be in order to run for this position. And I think more people need to familiarize themselves with that Constitution. So the fact that we have confused the idea of being educated with the idea of having a career. First of all, I don't even know that modern day education is worth anything. As far as I'm concerned, buy some books, do some reading, and you can learn a whole lot more than what they're teaching at universities and colleges these days. I don't know that I want to encourage my kids to go if they don't want to go. I think that women need to learn, and men, that a woman's worth is not whether she decided to have a career. So I am getting a lot of that pushback. Well, you didn't come from a background of working for the last, how long have I been married? 17 and a half years. Yes, I worked before that, though. I've had a job. I've done the workforce. This was a choice. So on top of that, the other issue I often face is when people say, well, what do you have for political experience? You know what political experience has gotten us thus far? It's the country that we're all fighting right now. That's political experience, because all political experience is grooming people to climb a ladder. They want them to start at a position that they don't even want. You know what? Run for city council first. Run for school board first. Then we'll put you at state rep. Then we'll put you at Senate. Then we'll put you at House at the U.S. level. This isn't... We should be running to serve the people for something that we are passionate about. This shouldn't be a political career. We should be serving our communities, our countries, our states. And instead, we've turned it into a conditioning situation where we actually have encouraged people to be groomed. And I love using the word groomed, because it really drives home the abuse that we've put ourselves through mentally, to think that this is the way it's supposed to be, when this is what is the cause of our country going downhill.
I agree with that. And that's a term that I think you're applying correctly and in the broadest way appropriately, because we have to start realizing as a society there is a significant grooming going on. It's not just the grooming of going into these elite classes. It's this secondary grooming that says you're not worthy. And in that there's a division to try to create this sort of sense of, I want to be part of you. And so it opens the door to have to submit to their rituals and their abuse and all the other things they ask of you. When did you make the decision to step into politics and why?
Well, I mean, the truth is, Scott, I've followed politics virtually my whole life. I think I really started paying attention when I was around 16 years old. And I went to, at the time, it was the number one public school in Massachusetts. So we had a fairly decent upbringing or education. I would say it's on par with many private schools even back then, never mind today. I bet it's better than some of those private schools now. But I always followed national politics. But the problem with being a military spouse, as you know, is that you don't stick around in a place long enough to get involved with local politics. And the truth is just like I was talking about with that group from teaching people that you got to start at school board. That's all local politics. So in order to really have a gauge on how politics are, you have to be in a place for a certain amount of time to be able to follow it. And by the time I would have had a chance to really grasp anything, I would have been moving again. So we really just watched politics at the national level and paid attention and voted, which I now realize was not enough. But we've done that for very many years. But we started getting involved in local politics back in 2020 here in Jacksonville, which is when I moved here. And it started with my son having to wear a mask to school. I started showing up at the school boards, and eventually it evolved into the mandate for the shot, and started fighting the DOD. And it's just grown and grown and grown, and it really became my focus even when I wasn't in a race. So I have done a lot of digging into the corruption that exists here in Florida, and I try to educate people on that.
This is an interesting fight and a different one than we've heard. You just made the comment that you were stepping in on behalf of your son for mask wearing. Were you living on post at that point in time?
No, we haven't lived on a military base since Rota, since Spain, back in 2009 was the last time I lived on a military base.
Were you, by any way, does the Department of Defense, as a military spouse, does it try to put pressure on you as they do your husband, and as he is a sailor, I guess, right? As he's in the Navy, correct?
Yeah, my husband is a naval officer, so I think there is a certain amount of behavior they expect military spouses, particularly officers. However, I think just like our standards for our military, those have gone downhill significantly since I've been in the community over the past decade.
So what pressure does Ted receive from work that you do for advocating for your children and their safety and their medical sovereignty?
So work isn't that, in terms of my children, they've not been for him to put much pressure on him for that. In terms of his own and his not taking the shot and, basically fighting back DOD, being a whistleblower over the past year, even, he's under investigation right now for... It's a way to keep him quiet. Let's just put it that way. They know they don't really have anything of substance, but they're putting him under investigation and not telling him exactly what he did wrong so that he can kind of walk on eggshells for that. But he has said if they try to pull out another, COVID type of situation while he's still there, that there's absolutely no way he's going to put a mask on his face. We got ahead of the game pretty early, though. They knew that we were going to be trouble. I had been digging into DOD instructions, NAV admins, all these things that, for the listener, that are basically DOD rules and things that they put into place so that people know how to conduct themselves. But I had been doing that for years for all sorts of situations, and not just COVID, but I always helped Ted with that kind of thing because I come from a very my grandfather was a homicide detective. My uncle was a homicide detective. So we have a lot of that detective analytical logical mentality. And I always helped him out, like looking for the answers within what the guidance was. And we got ahead of the game, and it really did throw them for a loop for a while. They didn't really know how to handle Ted. But now, after this whole last thing with the investigation starting, and it was all over an X post when he was in uniform, and it went viral, and that was it. That was it. When it went viral, it really irked them. So with that situation in particular, they have come down hard on him. He doesn't have access to the computer anymore. His cat card, his common access card, he can't put it into the computer and get anything. It just basically doesn't work. It gets him in and off of base, or I guess in base. But then now they've put him downstairs with facilities. I mean, they've essentially just cut him off from his job completely and unnecessarily. They're just doing it to keep him quiet.
Yeah, so this has been their standard tactic, to isolate and then to even do worse, to demean by virtue of job. That's well below what they were intended to do. So you have a whistleblower in the family. You are a mother of four, and Ted's still in the Navy, and you're stepping into politics to say enough is enough. Is that fair?
That's fair. That is absolutely fair. And I've been kind of throwing it in the face of his command anyway, because I'm out on X saying the things that he can't say, and I'm calling them out specifically. I'm not afraid of them. I'm not afraid of any of this, because at the end of the day, this country, we fought a revolutionary war, and my sixth great grandfather was part of that. He was an African slave. He won his personal freedom and helped this country win its freedom by being a part of that war. And those people faced some terrible deaths, infections, diseases, all sorts of things. If they were willing to give up their lives for this country, for this, the future of this country, for future generations, then I'm no better than that. So I need to be willing to do that too. So I'm going to be loud, and I'm going to be the squeaky wheel. And if they come after me, which they very well could, so be it.
So let's talk a little bit about your campaign, your grassroots. I know that. And are you in an area now where you're going to, obviously you're in an area where you're able to be permanent enough with Ted's association with the Navy, not to have to be worrying about being displaced, and you're running for office in what district and where?
So we live in Jacksonville, Florida, which is, it's our final destination. It kind of was always on the bucket list, but it's where we ended up. And it's Florida's 5th congressional district. It includes most of Jacksonville and then parts of the county below us, which is called St. John's County. And Ted retires in October. So we've owned our house here since 2019, and you know, we have no plans on leaving.
And what's your principal focus on your platform?
Government corruption. At the end of the day, everything stems from this. We can talk all day long about the border, or we can talk all day long about the DOD, or we can talk about how our education has intentionally been dumbed down in this country. We can talk about any issue at all, and it all stems from corrupt government.
It definitely does. Is it a congressional position, or are you going for Senate?
It's U.S. Congress.
Okay.
House.
Okay. This is a question many people ask, and I think it's important to address it always. We know that the system is highly corrupt. We know that there's all sorts of backdoor deals and machines and everything else that continue to corrupt our election system. I admire anybody that steps into the arena right now. What do you see as your way through this to victory? That's the bottom line.
Do you mean victory for me in this race, or do you mean victory for this country and what I can provide at the federal level?
Let's start first with victory for the race.
Yeah, so the race is really, that is the most difficult thing to put into words, because a lot of people don't quite understand what makes people win a race versus what makes people lose a race. People don't really grasp the fact that money comes for those big candidates, the incumbents, or the candidate that's being put out there by the establishment. It comes from other candidates and other PACs. So they always like to use money as a focal point for telling people why you should support that candidate. They say, oh, well, look, they already raised $500,000. Well, guess what? That $500,000 was not raised by regular people. As a matter of fact, if you look at my FEC reports, I am beating John Rutherford in one category of raising funds, and that's the under $100 donations. All of his funds are generally from people who can donate max or from other PACs. So what that essentially means is these people get, and by these people, I mean the incumbents and the establishment people, they get money put into their accounts as soon as they are open to start their race. They get these big PACs throwing in money, or other candidates who are closing out their PACs throw in their money. And then they use that as a talking point for how to get that person elected. Oh, well, you know, they have all this support. And then the average voter, the person who does not pay attention, ends up thinking, well, this person must be a good candidate if they have all that support. But the truth is it's really just another establishment installation. And you really do need to dig into and educate yourself, because if you are seeing TV ads, if you are getting mailers, if you are hearing radio ads, all of those things come from money. And where does the money come from? It comes from special interests and lobbyists, and not from the regular day-to-day person that you're going to meet down at the coffee shop. We don't, as regular humans, we do not have unending funds to just pop into people's accounts. You know, we have families that we have to support. We have car payments. We have mortgages. So we're not being honest with ourselves if we actually don't dig into where the money is coming from. Ted and I say it all the time, follow the money. Because once you see where the money is coming from, you will realize these people are not going to represent your interests. They are going to represent the interests of those special interest groups and the lobbyists. But that's the problem, is getting people to see that, getting people to understand that, getting people to look at voting records. And it's hard to reach everybody. That's really what it comes down to.
So what's your process to get that to happen? Because that is a critical component. I'm 100% with you. We are lacking a huge understanding, or willingness would be even better, to want to take the time to dig in. Now, I've recently been looking at precinct strategies, which I think are a big part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Are you involved with that?
Yes. So actually, in 2022, when the last Republican Executive Committee, so that's where the precinct strategy comes in. You want to get as many people into your committee so that they can vote the right leadership in and not just be blinded by the establishment focal. It just so happens that in 2022, I tried to join mine because the elections were coming up in December. And what the chairman got word that people were trying to join, and he shut down the meetings for the next 2 months with some excuses, like we have to phone bank for candidates. And then it was, well, it's the week of Thanksgiving, so we can't do it. And they knew what was coming. So we still do face the fact. And then they started loading their own people in. They would get their friends to recruit people so that they would overcome the patriots, the people like me and the people I work with. They knew what we were doing. They got word of it. They knew what we were doing. They tried to shut it down. Just so happens my Republican Executive Committee meeting is tonight. And, you know, they're not my biggest fan. Let's just put it that way. But you're right. Getting to those people is the hardest thing. And I'm going to get 1 minute to talk tonight. So I have to be very careful about what I say, because there are people that support me there. But I need to get through to the people that basically fall hook, line, and sinker for everything the establishment puts out. And that is where I need to make sure that I'm putting out a message that isn't coming after them for being ignorant or not paying enough attention, but rather to help them understand that they have power and that they should be using that power instead of handing that power over to the establishment who just wants to tell them how to vote.
One of the things I find very interesting, I ran a campaign up in Philadelphia, I'm actually now a part of the precinct committee here in my county. And what I find very interesting is the number of people that complain a lot, do little, as compared to the left, which tends to be very activated on the ground, literally doing the door knocking and the things that need to be done. Are you experiencing the same thing in your area?
Yes. Yeah, so I do see how the left functions versus the right, but I don't know that I would necessarily complain about it because I don't think the left has critical thinkers. I think that they're just told what to do. It's their form of establishment. They all just fall in line with their establishment. Whereas we're having a battle within the Republican Party, everybody knows it. Some people claim to be embarrassed by it. But the reason we're having that battle is because we have critical thinkers that are saying, wait a minute, we can't just follow the Republican Party leadership because they're not actually doing what we want them to do. So the battle I see within our party is it's necessary. We need to have this battle because we have to win this country back, and we're not going to do it with the Republicans we have in office right now when they're just buddying up to the Democrats. So I don't blame the Democrats for following their leadership because they're basically getting their way because the Republicans are voting with Democrats. So I see it. I know what you're saying. I think that we have critical thinkers that are really challenging the party.
I agree with you. I've said for a long time that of the two parties, the Republicans are the most corrupt and they're the most evil.
Absolutely.
They have brokered the deals with the left to be the front agents and make all the noise while they in the back end strategize how to migrate the Christian right into a center and leftist position. They are the worst of all. And the deeper we get into the compromise and how they've been willfully compromised, you also have to run those rabbit trails and ask who's controlling who. And too often it ends up being people you think are conservative that are pulling the strings on those that we see are outwardly liberal. It's a pretty disgusting organization. And so really what you're talking about is a strategy of taking the party back from within and reclaiming a control as it was intended to be rather than creating a third party. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. I believe that we need to be conservative again. And I do have a lot of friends that are libertarians, and at points in my frustration over the past decade, probably even more than a decade, I've thought about the libertarian platform, but there are some things I just can't get on board with under no circumstances. So I've always said we can't take this party. First of all, we can't win if we leave the party. We will never win if we leave the party. And we can't take the party back if we don't show up. So we have to be involved. We have to be part of the party. And once we gain control of the leadership positions, then we can fix our party. But we can only do it from within.
So now let's get to where you see what you can offer to Capitol Hill once you do get elected.
Yeah. And that is, it's going to be a challenge because I know that if I get there, I'm already going to have a lot of people that are not happy with what I stand for and what I look to accomplish, because my objective is to take down the system and the way it's working right now. I believe that we need election integrity. And when I say that, I'm not even just talking about, was there fraud? Was the election stolen? Was it? Yes, I absolutely believe it was. I have read a book called Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen? And after reading that book, I will tell you that is very likely as well. Fraud has been happening for a long time. But what I'm really, really wanting to go after are the campaign laws. If you look at McCain-Feingold, they wanted to pretend that those were put into place in order to help make things more valid or they were supposed to make things less corrupt, but the truth, or allegedly they were, they weren't really. It was all about creating a system in which it's easier for the establishment to maintain control. And I think we need to really look at campaign law again, because what we are seeing is the grassroots candidates getting steamrolled and slandered. And that's the thing. I don't know what people understand. PACs here in Florida, they often put out these mailers against grassroots candidates, and they just have blatant lies in them. And a lot of people believe, well, if it were a lie, they wouldn't be able to put it in print. Well, no, because PACs don't fall under that same law. They actually can lie and get away with it, but people don't know that. So we need to do much more than just, you know, look at election fraud. We need to look at election campaign finance and election campaign laws and really focus on how we can make it so that the people's voice ends up being heard at the end of the election. So that alone is something that, you know, the establishment is not going to want to go along with. They're going to try to shut me up and make me look bad and, you know, not give me committees, all the things that you saw them do to people that they try to punish for doing something against them. So I know I'm up against that, but my whole idea is just to be transparent with the people back at home and with the people of the country and say, this is what's happening to me. This is what they said to me. This is why they're going to take away campaign or committees. This is why they're not getting on my side to write any legislation. It's because they're mad that I'm doing X, Y, and Z. So transparency above all else, because it's the number one thing that we're lacking in our federal, well, in all government, actually, but our federal government, and therefore we end up leading to the corruption that we have. So transparency, accountability, and corruption, they're so intertwined, and we need to make sure that we're doing it so that we have accountability, transparency, and we get rid of that corruption.
Let's pivot back a minute for the DMA. Declaration of Military Accountability. What did that mean to you to add your name to that?
Honestly, it was probably one of the biggest honors of my life, because as we already said, you know, I'm not a veteran and I've never served, or I'm not currently serving, I should say. There were quite a few active duty people on that list too, and I applaud them, because that is asking for it when it comes down to it. When you're still in and you're signing that, you are asking for trouble in this current weaponized DOD. But it was very much an honor to be put on a list with 230 people who have served this nation, and saying that we are going to demand accountability and we are going to fight until we can no longer fight, as in until the end. We are going to have accountability. We're going to make sure this happens. So that was very much an honor for me.
You represent, by virtue of that, military wives, like it or not. I mean, that's just, you are the only one on there that is a wife and a spouse. And I think that's huge. Has this had any sort of increased reach for you to talk to other military wives? Those circles can be fairly tight. They can also be very influential. And are you in your walk, are you connected with others in those circles? Because this fight, when it gets down to the family and DOD rules, the kids are being subjected to some of the worst things anywhere, especially if they live on post.
Yeah, you know, I don't actually have a whole lot of military wife friends from this area. I have plenty from being stationed other places, and you know, a lot that I've made through the whole mandate and the wives of many of those that signed the DMA. We have stronger connections, and I'm sure you know, it's when you're in the military community, the connection is so strong to begin with, because you're all doing something that is not very common. It's a low percentage of people that live this lifestyle. So you already have this bond and you already feel like you're a family with people that you don't even know. Well, once the shot mandate came out, it was almost like everybody was very disheartened that was on the side that we are on against these shots, because it felt like we were being betrayed by our own community. So within that, we formed an even stronger community and made really close relationships with each other. So most of the military spouses I speak with now are either in my situation, somewhere else in the country, or are people that I already knew from beforehand. And they all will always support me, just because, you know, we love each other. We're family.
There is something about what you say, which is very true. And it also is you see it happening in the group of the DMA, because when you start to take a group and you start to put them together that have all been outcasts, there's a fairly quick bonding that happens and a fairly deep connection because of the common ties that you have against tyranny. I think at this point in time, one of the most shocking things for the nation as they begin to learn is how tyrannical our military has become. And I want you to talk a little bit about this from a wife and mother's perspective on the difference between a civilian world where there are many choices, even if they're difficult, to leave a job versus being the fight that you have to make when the military basically owns every avenue you have in your career and even the ability to leave.
Yeah, I mean, I think from a military, and this is another reason why, and it's not the reason, but it's another reason why I wouldn't have chosen the lifestyle of having a career. I have so many friends that every time they had to PCS might even have to switch fields because wherever they were moving, there wasn't a job available for them. So it really isn't a typical way of life to have to become accustomed to something and then just have to switch it up if you want to have a career or if you need to have a career. There are lots of military families that need to have two incomes, and we are blessed that we're not one of them, but there is a definite differentiation to be made between I'm leaving my career because I'm not happy here and I'm leaving my career even though I'm really happy, I have to because my family is moving. I can't even tell you how many friends I've had tell me over the years, you know, I just wish I could go back to that job I had 10 years ago, 5 years ago, 2 years ago. We have to give up things that a lot of people don't have to give up. I mean, I'm not complaining by any means. We chose this life to an extent, you know, to the best of best way of describing it. You know, I can't really say we chose it. We chose the man or the woman that we wanted to marry, and we let this be a part of that because we had that choice to say either I want to be with this man or woman, or I don't want to be with them enough to give up my normal, typical life. But it is a huge difference. It's hard to explain that difference. You just have to roll with the punches and really take change as it comes. And I think change is something a lot of people are not comfortable with, which is another reason why we see ourselves in this political situation, is because people go with the evil that they know and are not willing to take the risk of trying something that might be better just out of fear that it could be worse.
When this mandate came out in the military, I mean, you're put in a position of having, obviously, to support your husband. You're obviously in a place where it sounds to me like you were well enough informed to see the dangers of what was coming. But there had to be some pretty intense discussions in the family of what directions and where to go. Can you give us some insight into that?
Absolutely. So my husband happened to be the legal officer, which isn't a position of being a lawyer. It's just the liaison between something or someone that may happen within his command and the JAG that works for his command. So he had been in the situation previously at another command where he was the legal officer. So he kind of jumped into it real well here, didn't have to go through any more training because he already had it under his belt. So as soon as we heard that the mandate was coming, we had questions in and of ourselves. We had talked to a few other people that had questions, and he immediately knew he could just reach out to the JAG and ask those questions. So we kind of set it up in a way where it was, we've already heard that this shot that is coming is not FDA approved, which it was not. That whole thing was a farce. A lot of people still don't understand it. They don't really grasp the concept that when a piece of paper comes out that says, okay, it's FDA approved, that automatically everything that has been produced under EUA does not automatically become FDA approved. And that's only scraping the surface on that. But we knew it was coming. We dealt with, like I said, the DOD instructions, the NAV admins, the things that are kind of the way that they run the show. We were all ready to go with the JAG on that. Like, you can't force this. What happens if there's a vaccine injury? We went down this road and we asked those questions from the very beginning. So they knew that we were already on top of all of the information, more so than even they were within the command.
One of the pictures that keeps coming out in these interviews with people tied to the DMA is that when a strong opposition was put before the command, even though the command resorted to unethical tactics to try to break and persuade somebody to take the vax, ultimately holding the line on the truth and righteousness seems to win every time. And they weren't prepared for that sort of pushback. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. I mean, I suppose I would agree to an extent. If you look at the case of Mark Bashaw, he won in principle. He won. And in terms of his punishment, even though he was found guilty, which is absolutely absurd to me, the judge said there should be no punishment. Now, of course, the prosecution, which happens to be a Vindman brother who is running for Congress in Virginia's 7th District against Cameron Hamilton, who is a far better suit, the politicalization of it still affected so many members. I mean, we had over 8,000 kicked out even when they stuck to their guns. But yeah, you see Billy Mosley, who won his court martial. And at the end of the day, the most important thing is careers might have been lost, but we still feel like we won because we know we did what God wanted us to do. We know that we followed what the Holy Spirit guided us to do. And now we're in this fight together, and we couldn't be in it with better people because we are all divinely inspired. Even those of us that, and not me personally, but those that consider themselves atheists, whether they know it or not, something was telling them that they shouldn't take it and that they should fight back. And I believe that to be God. What they believe it to be, that's their free will. But it is God that brings us together and that can see this battle between good and evil. So I do think at the end of the day, we did all win.
Absolutely. No, 100%. So are your kids in public school or do you homeschool?
So I homeschooled. This is funny. I homeschooled up until we moved to Florida. And my oldest, who's now 16, he was 12 at the time. But he's an artist, and he's talented. So we knew we were going to be living near an art school, which is a public school. It's a magnet school, which means it's really focused on its discipline, which in this case is art. And I asked him, I said, do you want to try to go back to public school? Because he had gone to public school through first grade, and he was going into seventh grade. And he said, well, yeah, if it's an art school, I would like to do that. So my daughter, my second born, she had never been to a public school at all, and she was homeschooled right up through second grade. And when I put him back in, I figured I should give my other kids a chance to go as well. But the three younger kids, they went to charter school. So they're at a school that actually has a flag right in the main area that says, under God. It says under God right there. So I feel more confident about that. But he was at this art school, and they had ended up having furries, and I had all sorts of issues with the teachers there, so we pulled him out, and now he's at a Catholic school here called Bishop Kenny.
Wow. It's changed a lot. I mean, I had two boys that were in, one was in the International Baccalaureate program down there and for high school. It was a very good program at the time, but that takes us back a long time. The corruption of the schools is deep, and it's phenomenal how bad it's become everywhere. Even in my small town here, the high school actually has discovered that they actually put a litter box in one of the kids' bathrooms. So,
it's beyond me how anyone can actually rationalize that. I don't see what good it does, or the direction of our schools essentially is being broken down intentionally. The dumber the people are and the more divided they are, and we categorize people, black, white, male, female, gay, straight. When the more boxes we put people into, the easier it is for them to create these non-existent fights between us instead of realizing that our real fight is with the government. So this is all intentional, and it is unbelievable that we can't see through it.
I agree with you. No, it's a horrific moment in our history, but as you stated, and I think it's well pointed out, the critical thinkers are tend to be predominantly on these, I would say, independent and conservative side, if we're going to use political categories, and they are definitely awakening to this threat and asking the hard questions and looking for ways through this through the powers of truth and what you're doing by running even and running for office. So what is your timeline now? Are you into a primary? What's the way ahead here?
My primary is on August 20th, so I am blessed that I have a whole lot more time than some of the other people, you know, that are in a time crunch at this point. I know we've got a couple coming up for some of us DMA signatories, I think May and June. And I benefit from being the last one because I kind of get to see what they do, how they do, and take from their experiences to see what I can apply to maybe push myself over that goal line. So I do have the blessing of having a very late primary.
That's excellent for you. And what do you have for volunteer base? And are you taking volunteers?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm always taking volunteers. We have a great volunteer base. A lot of people are just fed up with what's going on. I find that we have here in Jacksonville and Duval County, we have a lot more people that are blinded by the system. Whereas the other part of my district, which is St. John's County, so many of those people have their eyes open. So it's ironic. I live in Duval County, but most of my really strong patriots are coming out of St. John's County.
If I'm not mistaken, isn't Jackson County an entirely incorporated county by the city of Jacksonville? Like it doesn't really have a sheriff in the traditional sense. Is that correct?
We have a sheriff. He's not a fan of mine. It's in terms of traditional. I don't know exactly how traditional it is or is not. I have to say, growing up in Massachusetts, we had a totally different system of how the police and the sheriff's department worked. Sheriff department really wasn't as prominent as, you know, state troopers or municipalities. And, I come from a family of cops. So, those generally Boston cops, but it is different than what I was used to. And when I moved down here, I kind of thought that, I still really back the blue and I do back the blue. I am totally for the good cops of the world, but I didn't realize how corrupt cops could be until I moved down here. And it's upsetting to me because, you know, I've always really been a strong supporter of the law enforcement, and it was eye opening. But I will say, yeah, we do have a sheriff's office.
Fair enough. I mean, it's definitely when you say you come from that northeastern side, which is for those that haven't lived there to appreciate the directness, which I've always valued. I lived up in New Jersey for a while, and the directness that provokes or brings about, and there's really there's much more speaking things in truth, even though they're brutal at times. And there's, I don't know how you find that down in Florida. I know here in Oregon that little part comes out once in a while and it'll be like, wow, that's a little uneasy. And it's like, it's truth is truth. And with that, you have to speak out these hard truths, which I think holds accountability. When we start not to do that, I think it's a lot easier to put that vanilla icing on things and try to make believe that it's all okay. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I do notice, and I do have other friends from the Northeast down here, that people don't really understand us fully. I would say it's worse out in the West Coast where you are. We lived in Washington State for a while, and not just the attitude in general, but sarcasm isn't well received. And I can't tell you, before my life became more serious, everything that came out of my mouth or my husband's mouth, it was always a joke. It was always sarcastic. We didn't ever say things that were serious. So it's really, we kind of still don't. We keep it serious when we have to, but at the end of the day, we use dark humor, we use sarcasm, we use all the things. And a lot of people don't understand it because they weren't raised on it, and they don't know how to receive it. They certainly don't know how to give it. But you're not wrong. People will take it and kind of be befuddled about what is your point is really where they have a look on their face. Like, what are you saying to me?
Exactly. No, that's exactly right. So, well, I mean, as far as kind of your words to other mothers, as we kind of wind this down, and to other, and I think that's the big voice here, because you're a mother of four, you're a military spouse, and you have homeschooled and you're now in the political space. I think those are huge statements. I would ask just, what are your thoughts or words to other women out there of the same in situations now, wondering what to do?
Get involved. Everybody, women, men, the people that don't know what they are, get involved. If you stand for something, if you believe in something, even if it's not something I believe in, get out there and get involved, because you can't understand the system if you're not a part of it, if you're not interacting with it. And the number one thing I want people to know about the system is that they don't want us to get along. So we're not getting along because they've laid out the plan in order to make us think that we don't get along. And you will see through that if you get involved. You will start to understand why our country is at odds, why our people are at odds. It's because that's how they keep their power. And if you watch it happen, if you follow the money, if you go and see the relationships between the politicians at the local level all the way up through the federal government, if you go to the school board, if you go to the city council or the county commission, whatever you have, wherever you are, if you get involved, and I know people are pressed for time, and you know it's hard. It is definitely hard to get motivated when you've had a long day with the kids or a long day at work, and you just want to go home and relax. But the thing is we're not going to have that privilege if we let our country go. We're not going to be able to do those things. So we have to our best capacity, get involved with our community and our local governments and our committees and our party clubs, depending on what party you are, but you have to get involved to be able to accomplish anything.
That's good words right there. Well, we always close with a prayer. Mara, if it's okay, I'll do a prayer.
Absolutely.
Father God, I just want to thank you for this blessed meeting here and this conversation we've had today. And truly just want to pray a blessing over Mara and Ted and their family, and for the courage of standing up in this hour of speaking truth to power and to leading others in their community and around them to understand the importance of speaking truth, importance of walking in righteousness, and the importance of leading by example. So I want to pray a blessing over Mara and her campaign, all the resources needed, and to take this voice that only you can do, Father, to take this voice and make it a voice of Holy Spirit that will cut through the places that otherwise seem impossible, to open the doors that only you can open, and just bless her and guide her for a victory that we so need. And we pray these things in Christ Jesus' name. Amen.
Amen.
So where can people find you and follow you? All that good stuff.
So my website is www.maramacie.com. That's M-A-R-A-M-A-C-I-E for Congress, either the letters F-O-R or the number 4. And I'm most active on X, and my handle is @MaraMacie. I do have, you know, Facebook or Instagram, but generally other people are running that for me. I'm not really there. You could probably reach out and I will get back at some point, but you really want to be involved, go to X. That's where I am the most.
And if somebody wants to volunteer for your campaign, how do they do that?
So they can go right to that website, and we've got a form there they can fill out, or they can just send me a direct email. It's maramacieforcongress@protonmail.com.
All right. Well, that's awesome. We're going to push it out, and love to keep me posted, and I'll see it on the DMA. But do keep me posted on your day of your primary, because we're doing prayer days for each of the DMA candidates. So it's as much as we can.
Okay. Thank you, Scott. Yeah, it's August 20th.
Okay, well, awesome. Well, Mara, it's been a pleasure. Really has been. Thank you for coming on.
I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. Have a blessed day. God bless you.
You too. God bless.
Bye-bye. Well, Patriots, that was Mara Macie, and she's a signatory on the Declaration of Military Accountability, as you know, and the only one that is not a acting or a service member or a veteran, but rather a military wife, which I think is extremely important because it represents a completely different dimension of this COVID fight. And she is a fighter, and it should be an inspiration to us all and a reminder to us all of what we need to do to get involved and continue to stay involved and to take this nation back. Patriots, keep your head up and your eyes forward. Never bow to evil. Never relent. Always press into the fight. God is with us. He'll never forsake us. And in the end, God always wins. But we are here in this time, in this place, for just such a time as this. We're at war. So walk boldly and fearlessly with Christ. Occupy the land. Expand the kingdom. Subdue the enemy. Mission forward. Patriots, I'll be back and see you in the morning for Bended Knee. Until then, or until the next time, God bless. Good night. Thank you. And out for now.
Oh, I want to feel something. I just want to breathe again. Dive into the